Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 20th day of March. Yes, the first day of spring, Anno Domini 2021. And you, you lucky springy people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. On Monday, an Azure Active Directory issue.
Yes, yeah. Call it that.
Yeah, causing authentication problems is affecting a subset of Microsoft customers worldwide across many Microsoft services, including, but not limited to, Microsoft 365, Microsoft Teams, Exchange Online, Forms, Xbox Live, Intune, Outlook.com, Office Web, SharePoint Online, OneDrive for
breath,
Business, Yammer, and the Azure Portal.
What? Don't tell me what's down. Tell me what's up.
Yeah, take a breath. So, yeah, so if you run your company on Microsoft stuff this week and you suddenly couldn't log in on Monday,
that was it.
You know, take a snow day.
Exactly. From about 3:15 p.m. Eastern Time on March 15th. To about 7:15 a.m. March 16th, many people could not log in. Microsoft has apologized deeply.
Whoops.
Deeply. The authentication login issues behind the outage were caused by an error that affected the correct rotation of the signing keys used to support Azure AD's use of OpenID.
The signing keys will get you every time, man.
Every time. Signing keys are private and public cryptographic key pairs that are used to sign authentication requests from a user. Microsoft's identity platform rotates signing keys on a periodic basis for security purposes, with apps being required to handle key rollover events so that authentication attempts don't fail. Over the past few weeks, a particular key was marked as retained for longer than normal to support a complex cross-cloud migration. This exposed a bug where the automation incorrectly ignored the retained state, leading it to remove that particular key. After the signing key was removed, even though it was marked to be retained longer, apps used Azure AD authentication services immediately stopped trusting the token signed with the removal key. This led to all user logon attempts to affected apps and services being rejected, and as a result, users no longer were able to access their accounts. Microsoft engineers rolled back the key metadata to the state before the worldwide service outage to mitigate the issue. However, the outage wasn't immediately mitigated due to the different server implementations that handle caching differently. Users continued experiencing issues until the impacted apps managed to pick up the updated key metadata and refresh their caches. For those of you who zoned out during that explanation, basically what happened was that a flag was ignored and nobody could log on. Then they fixed the flag, but still nobody could log on until the key propagated across all of Microsoft products and everybody's cache updated. For those of you who zoned out during that explanation, it was human error. And our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis, would like us to remind you, is Microsoft experiences massive outage and embarrassment. And your choices are, I got caught, I was lucky, I don't use Microsoft products, and other. So far, we have 37 votes.
So that's how you say that.
Okay, 37 votes. Number one is I was lucky. Oh, number one and number two, I was lucky and I don't use Microsoft products, are tied.
Okay.
Other is four and I got caught as three. And of course, if you said other, head on over to our forum at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff. You'll see the forum. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 20 Mar 21. Microsoft experiences massive outage and embarrassment. There are six posts so far, and we'd love you to have us join. We'd love to have you join us. Jeez and crackers!
So, Did you not take your caffeine this morning?
I didn't have enough caffeine this morning, and I'm not sure there is enough for this morning.
Oh, boy.
And of course, you can give us, you know what I mean to say there, and you can also give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Don't bother texting us. We're not doing that today.
Okay.
Also, you may have noticed that both Steve and Dave are out today, one step ahead of the law, somewhere mm-hmm. in the Southwest. God bless Michael Oden. He came in and is managing the board better than anybody else on the planet. And, of course, Dennis Worcester. We
hello,
love
hello.
To have Dennis here. Thank you.
Yes, the mysterious voice in your mind is mine.
It's yours. And he's got his cool little pin on.
That's right.
Not anymore.
Uh-oh.
Oh, there
here it is.
Yeah, it's hiding under there.
Yes, it's my Beam Authentic that my friend Todd gave to me. It's a circular LCD, and you wear it like a pin, you know, like the old days when you'd wear a pin and talk about your favorite band in the 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can load graphics or words or other things on it, and it displays like a little image, and it's a lot of fun to wear and always gets people's attention.
Sure. To get back to this.
Yeah.
It seems to me that this is a poor omen for Microsoft's intended change to Windows in general.
Hmm.
Because they, of course, want to make Windows become...
cloud-based, right?
Right. Operating system as a service.
Right.
So you would download, you would really run it from the cloud. And if they can't let people log into their cloud, that's going to have a... I mean, there are already a bunch of really porked-off users.
Right.
But they're business people. When you add the hundreds of millions of desktop users in the country, you've got a problem.
It's going to be some trouble
in the world. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It's not just Microsoft that's had trouble with these signing keys lately. Hewlett Packard last fall had an issue with their printer drivers,
yes.
where they did not sign the printer driver with the appropriate key. So the OS, at least on the Mac, had a lot of trouble. Couldn't verify right. that anybody hadn't messed with it on its way from HP to you, and therefore would not let you install it. And that was a big problem because it also invalidated all the printer drivers for anybody who had already installed them, which right. meant that all the Mac users that I was dealing with, none of them who had HP printers, could print.
Right.
And I said, and I tried to...
Was that all?
Yeah, I tried to let them know, hey, it's not just you guys, it's literally every Mac HP user on the planet. It's not just you. So we worked together, and we got it all resolved. They quickly made a different driver available, but it required a lot of hand-holding and a lot of gentle reassurance that things were going to work out okay.
Print is dead, man.
Dead trees, man.
Dead trees, man. Don't print. Yeah, that's a genuine problem that people don't understand. When you authenticate things through the web, if you can't get to the internet or somebody screws up at the other end,
right.
you've got a genuine issue.
Right. Well, and to be fair with Microsoft, the things that we're not supposed to trust, unencrypted stuff, right. didn't trust the unencrypted stuff.
Right.
So it failed in the proper way, I guess, would be the best way to put it. And it failed in a predictable way. You know, it wasn't completely unusual. This was a result of apparently a transfer that was happening, and they were internally asking for exceptions within their own process. And from what I understand from the news article, you know, some of the things respected that and other things didn't.
Right. The problem, of course, was that they had multiple versions of the same product.
Right.
You know, somebody didn't update.
Uh-huh.
And the old ones didn't work right, and the new ones did.
Right.
So that was part of the problem. Before we go to the phones, I should mention that there late last night, long after I'd done all this, there was an interesting warning that Apple released. They actually released it back in February, but they re-released it last night.
Mm-hmm.
And it detailed how there are a number of Apple products, particularly the phones and many of those things, that could interfere with medical devices used by some people with heart conditions.
Right.
And it's all the MagSafe stuff. Anything with a magnet in it can interfere with defibrillators or pacemakers or, you know, any of those things that you have. And so that's certainly the iPhone 12.
Yep. The 12, 12 mini, 12 Pro, 12 Pro Max.
Right.
Any of the MagSafe accessories.
Right. The MagSafe charger, the MagSafe duo charger.
Yes.
So stay and keep it. Keep your phone at least 6 inches away from your heart. So don't put it on an inside pocket.
Yes, to avoid any potential interactions with these devices. This, I'm reading from Apple's Apple's page here. Keep your iPhone and MagSafe accessories a safe distance away from your device, more than 6 inches, or more than 12 if you're wirelessly charging. But consult with your physician and your device manufacturer for specific guidelines.
Right. But for those of you who have pacemakers or defibrillators or some other implanted device, and I don't honestly know if that also includes insulin pumps and things like that, but be safe, you know.
Just double check.
Talk to your doctor.
Yeah, with the vendor. Yeah,
just keep your phone away from it. And I would also say do that for every wireless charging device. iPhones do it. A lot of Samsung phones. A lot of certain models of the Pixel phone. A couple LG models that I know of do it. So. Anything that does wireless charging can be a problem, but specifically something with a magnet in it. So the iPhones have a magnet in them. So when you put them, apparently Apple does not trust you to be able to properly put your phone down on a flat surface. So they put a magnet in there to center.
Yep, to align the phone on the charger. That way, wireless charging is cool, but it's finicky.
It's very finicky.
You have to line up the coils. There's a coil in the phone that's connected to the battery, and there's a coil on the charger, and you're using magnetic induction, like if you're using an induction cooker your kitchen, to essentially broadcast electricity wirelessly from one antenna coil to another antenna coil.
Right.
And you're pushing electrons around that way. But you have to line up those antennas just right in order to, I'm using air quotes here, get the best reception from the broadcasting device to the receiving device. And the magnets help align that the best. When you don't have the best reception, your charging may not happen at all, or it may happen much more slowly. Right. And there's nothing more annoying than waking up in the morning and picking your phone up off the wireless charger and realizing, oh, it's dead because it didn't charge overnight the way it was supposed to.
Right.
So Apple's trying to make the phone align itself on the charger. And this is magnets were the interesting way that they chose to do that.
Right. I had a Pixel 1, and it had wireless charging.
Yeah.
And I never had a problem. In the 2 years I owned it, I never had a problem. But I guess, why not? But it now causes an issue with that MagSafe business. I actually have MagSafe on my phone for charging.
Uh-huh.
I bought a little device that you plug in here and goes on the thing, and it now wirelessly charges. But I don't have
that's
a
cable. Yeah.
And B, it's not that strong.
Right. So, right. And Apple's talking about bringing MagSafe as a concept in order to not necessarily just for wireless charging, but in order to keep your connector connected to your laptop or to other devices.
Right.
And
MagSafe is a great idea.
Yes.
And I don't know if people are stealing the idea or licensing it from Apple, because I know Apple patented it. So,
Apple has a lot of patents. They like to defend them.
Right.
I think the concept of wireless charging has been around longer than just Apple.
Oh, right. But wireless charging, I'm talking about the MagSafe business.
The MagSafe as a trademark,
thing,
patented
right.
thing. Yeah, they've had that for decades.
Right.
On their older laptops, it was an easy way. Anybody with little kids or pets, you set your laptop down on the coffee table, and Sparky runs by, and suddenly his tail catches the charging cord, and your laptop tumbles to the ground. Well, if you've paid a couple grand for that laptop, you'd really prefer it stayed where you put it.
Right.
So the MagSafe let the cable break away from the laptop without pulling the laptop to the ground.
Right. And also, when Sparky grabs that thing and goes, it can also ruin the connector.
That's true.
Which cannot be fixed.
No, there's no good way to do that.
There's really no good way to do that. So, all right. But be that as it may, be careful if you have any sort of medical device on your body and
right.
you have an iPhone, any phone with a magnet in it.
Keep it in your pants pocket, not in your shirt pocket.
Exactly right.
I think
all right,
okay.
To the phones. Our first caller is Gary from Henrietta, New York. What's up? Hello?
It's Sally.
Sally.
Oh, Sally. It says
that's
Sally,
okay.
And I wrote Gary. I don't know why. Apparently, the drugs have not yet kicked in. I apologize, Sally.
That's all right.
Okay.
We'll get him up to speed okay. while you mention your question.
I'm the Sally from Old L.O.
Oh, hi, Sally.
Hi. Happy spring.
Happy spring to you.
I have a mystery happening on my Windows 10 Pro laptop. MP4s videos that I make with my phone and copy to my computer have worked fine forever. And this week they just stopped working. I don't know why. The only MP4s that are still working are a couple that my brother sent to me from his iPhone. So I don't know why MP4s would work forever and then just stop working. I had some kind of Windows update on March 15th.
Yeah.
List anything about like messing up your media player, but
right.
I don't know what happened.
One thing that I can recommend while we're searching for alternate solutions is to mm-hmm. consider a different media player. There's one that we really like where I'm from called VLC, for Video LAN Client, and it's available for free. And it's available for Windows and for the Mac.
I think it's in the Microsoft Store.
It probably is. You can also get it at videolan.org. And you'll know you've got the right one because the icon looks like a big traffic cone.
Okay.
Tool could play your MP4s.
Right. Windows Media Player has had some issues. This is, I think, the third or fourth time it stopped playing MP4s.
Yeah.
You don't say.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Well, I've been lucky.
It's not just you.
Yeah.
I've been lucky to get this far.
Yeah, as a matter of fact. As Dennis said, try VLC, Video LAN, whatever the
client.
System,
yep.
Client.
It
will play dang near anything, and you can either make it your default or, try it. Just by opening VLC and then opening the file for a while until you decide whether or not you like it.
Right. That'll let you see if those files will open in anything or if it's just an issue with a media player.
Right.
Yeah. As I was doing some research on this, two things came up. One was that you have a malware or virus that's shutting down your MP4s, so that was scary.
Maybe.
But
right.
None of my scanners came up with anything. And one other post I saw said to install K-Lite Codec Pack Basic. And I haven't done that yet because I thought maybe I should check with you guys.
I'd say if it wasn't from Microsoft, I would not recommend it.
Yeah, exactly.
It would be just as likely that download contained something undesirable.
Yeah. All right.
So I would say start with VLC. Yep, start there. See if it opens your media files. If they play there, great. Watch your files and smile. If they don't play there, then something bigger is going on, and it might be the file itself.
And they might not, in fact, be MP4s,
it's
even
all
though
the
they
files, though.
Yeah, they may not really be MP4s, even though they say they are. They could be WebM or they could be MPPs.
Sure.
Oh yeah. Oh.
And so they might have a different. They might need a different codec, which Windows Media Player doesn't have. But VLC, I don't think there's a media codec that isn't in VLC.
Yeah, VLC is like a Swiss Army knife. It's got everything.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
Thanks for calling,
Thank
Sally.
You guys.
Good to hear from you, Sally.
Yes. Good to hear you. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye bye.
Yeah. VLC is a very cool product. There's no. I have not yet found any, at least semi modern.
It's super handy.
Yeah.
And it's available, like I said, for everything. You can get it for Windows. You can get it on your Chromebook. You can get it for Ubuntu or Android. It's for the Mac, for Windows. It's available everywhere for everything. It opens lots of stuff. It's just something super handy to keep around.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jeffrey from Henrietta. Hi, Jeffrey. What's up?
Hi there. Just a follow-up from last weekend's call regarding my Canon embedded printers that wouldn't hook up.
Yes.
So I had success on getting it hooked up to Chrome.
Oh, good.
But what didn't work, I did the Chrome update. And even though it listed all the Canon printers, the one that I had was not listed.
Ah.
So I thought, well, let's go through and get some that are close. So I kind of selected, and then after about the 5 or 6 try, I happened to select the alternate model, and it worked.
Oh, excellent.
Good. I'm so pleased.
That's great.
Excellent. So,
thank you for keeping us up to date on that.
Yep. Well, there's more to this.
Okay.
So everything worked great, and on Tuesday, my router bit the dust.
Oh, no.
So I was like, okay, got to do that. So I got a new router.
Okay, cool.
And I guess some of the new routers have a combo 2.4 megahertz and the 5
yes.
into one router.
Right.
So yep. I kind of think in the house, okay, I've got to change all my passwords and things. And I made a list. So it was like, darn, I have 27 items that I had their updates.
Yep.
I had no, between Echoes and computers and stuff.
Yes, modern life.
So I got that. So then I could not get my brother printer to print on the Chromebooks again. So thinking, well, maybe call you guys back again. But then I thought, oh, there's an app for it. And it's Mopria app. So I installed that on the Chromebooks. And all of a sudden, it found my brother printer. And everything works.
Excellent. Oh,
wonderful. Well, you can go outside and look at the sunshine and smile and just take a deep breath and enjoy life.
Exactly. It's so nice going to any machine and everyone works. It's like, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
You guys are part of that help, and I appreciate it.
Hey,
our pleasure. Good that you're working, Jeffrey. Thank you.
And thank you for giving us a call back and letting us know. You know, sometimes we don't always get that, so that's really nice to hear.
Okay, thanks, and I'll listen later.
Okay,
thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Well, I know how he feels because I myself had a printing success this week, which was really nice. I have a very small little Brother laser printer, and I think it's the 2340DW. It does duplex. It's wireless. And for a long time, I'd had it on the wireless and had been very stable, and it was doing just fine. It has a multi-level sleep. It can be on. And, you know, the fuser's all warmed up. It's burning lots of juice, keeping the fuser hot. Or it can go into sleep mode. And then it can also go into deep sleep.
Great.
And when it goes into deep sleep, usually you would expect to be able to wake it up and say, hey, I've got a print job for you. Please lay this down as paper and bake the toner on the paper for me. And it would just sit there and snore. I couldn't roust it. So... what I learned was there's a secret combination you can press, and I found it on YouTube, that eliminates the deep sleep and just keeps it in regular sleep mode.
Nice.
And when it's only in just the mode,
right,
then it's able to be woken up successfully. And my wife and my kids and myself have all been able to print from our various devices, and it's been a much happier second half of the week because of that.
I'm sure of that. I have found that every once in a while, my wife, when she prints from Microsoft Word, she's a Windows gal.
Okay.
When she prints from Word, the printer ignores everybody else. The Word is not letting go of the printer correctly.
Oh. So once she grabs it.
The printer. Right. Not all the time.
The printer loves your wife just as much as you do.
Exactly right. And I completely understand wanting to cling to
She's
that
She's very
woman.
Attractive.
Absolutely understand.
Yes, it pulls in all sorts of attention.
Right.
From printers, husbands.
Exactly. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dennis Worster, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 30 minutes after the hour where you're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 37 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And we have Matt from Webster, New York on the line. Hiya, Matt. What's up?
Hey, what's going on, guys? I just installed the latest, greatest version of Ubuntu, Groovy Gorilla.
Yeah.
And I got to know, listen, here's the deal. What's the difference between a .iso and a .bin file? Because I had to rename this, and on the flash drive, it let me just go ahead and do everything.
Right. Right. Okay. A .bin file, a .binary file, is just a it's just a designation that means this is binary data, which of course everything is, but it doesn't mean
it doesn't
much.
Contain text. It's not intended to be interpreted as something else.
Right. It's just a binary file that you have to do something else with.
Right. To be processed.
An ISO file is the kind of file you find on a DVD.
Yeah. Or a CD.
Or a CD.
Yep. ISO stands for International Standards Organization. It's
right.
some super square group of people that love to, do their taxes longhand and do all their math and show the work.
Right. So when you burn a file to a DVD or a CD, if you burn it if you burn an ISO file to a CD or a DVD, it generally is bootable.
Yeah, yeah. It's usually a disk image. It's a collection of data that when you write it to a CD, you're essentially making a bit for bit copy of the original CD. And
right.
It's very common for software, especially operating systems, to come or be downloadable in that format.
Right. And often in the old days, you had to burn it to a CD or a DVD in order to get it to work.
Right.
Nowadays, on any modern operating system, an ISO can be mounted as if it were a drive. So when you download it as a bin file because it allows the system to deal with it in a download manner correctly. But then by renaming it as a .iso, you're signaling to the operating system that this is something you can boot with or mount as a drive or whatever it is you want to do.
But it was like so funny because I like downloaded it from the site and then it just said change your name to like a different thing. And then instead of having to do like the pen drive Linux thing, it just went straight to it. And I was just like, wow.
Yep.
You know, I was like, I didn't know I could do that.
Yeah. Now, you know,
it's fun to learn something new.
Now, not every binary file is an ISO.
That's true.
So some binary files are other things, but if you follow the instructions correctly, and it is an ISO, then you can deal with it properly that way. Okie doke.
All right. Have a good spring, guys.
Okay.
You too, Matt.
Great
thanks.
Talking to you.
Thanks for calling.
Yep. Yeah. Calling it a .bin makes it easier for a whole bunch of reasons that are very technical, but basically the way the operating system deals with it. But if you want to actually make it work, then you really need, as an ISO, then you need to just rename it ISO.
That's right.
And then the operating system, oh, okay, here, this is what this is. Okay. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hi, Tom. What's up?
Yeah, hi. So I frequently get notices for meetings. These are Zoom meetings, you know, I get them through email. And they usually include something that says, you know, you can initiate it, put it on your calendar. And then a message comes up saying that this gives Zoom permission to view your entire calendar.
Yep.
What does that mean? I mean, is there any issue here of privacy that's being compromised?
Yes.
All I want to do is put it on my calendar so I can remember to click on it when the time for the meeting comes up. I don't want to give Zoom, the company Zoom, or any other company for that matter, permission to look at my entire calendar.
Well, you're kind of not. Basically, what it's saying is that by adding this, it has to be able to read and write to your calendar to add that particular thing. With many of them, they include as an attachment to the email a file .ics. That ICS file is an iCalendar format file, and almost every calendar program reads it.
Right.
And so you can, in fact, import an ICS to the Google Calendar or pretty much any other calendar.
Sure.
So rather than click on that and let Zoom read and write your calendar, you can download that .ICS file and import that into your calendar. It's now a two-step process, but that's much more secure.
Right.
What I do is I simply highlight the link that's included. I highlight it, copy it, and paste it into my calendar.
Sure.
Right.
That's another way to do it. That's equally valid.
Yeah. It's multiple steps, but I just get the feeling that they're trying to get access to your calendar for ulterior purposes.
Hmm.
Well, no one's proved that yet, so we certainly won't say it on the air.
That's right. Yeah, I personally don't have any evidence to prove that. But what I can say is most commonly, if you want to be able to write to the calendar, chances are good you also need to be able to read from it. So it doesn't surprise me, but I doubt that they want to do more than they have to because it's more potential areas for bugs to pop up if you try and do more than you're really intending to.
But if you want to be secure, then that's the way to do it.
Yes.
Either copy and paste download
track.
The ICS and import it into your calendar. Either one works fine and keeps you that much little bit more secure.
Right.
Yeah, I think in this world that we live in, that's probably the right approach.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay, guys. Thanks very much.
Yes.
Thanks.
Thank you for calling.
Yep. The fact is that pretty much everything wants to be wide open these days.
Well,
that's the way the web used to be.
Well, and what I like is that people are more concerned about it.
Yes.
Not because they're anxious, but just because the programs are saying, hey, by the way, if you do this, this particular app needs this type of access. Is that okay?
Right.
Rather than just assuming on your behalf.
Right.
We've all seen the apps in the past that would you join their social network and suddenly they were contacting everybody on your contacts list to try and say, hey, so-and-so just joined. Wouldn't you like to join too?
I just joined a new business network.
Okay.
I've probably gotten 300 emails in the last 2 days.
Yes.
I'm about to quit.
Yes. They want to get your LinkedIn profile.
They want everything. Hundreds of people that I don't even know are saying, oh, we should share leads back and forth. No, I don't have leads. I'm retired.
Yeah, let me know when you got leads for me and we'll talk.
I don't even know why I bother to join this thing. It's time for me to quit. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi. Nick, once in a while I'll call and I'll suggest a program I think is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And last time was DaVinci Resolve.
Yes, that's a good one.
Yeah, it's awesome. Well, quite a while back, for uninstallers, we've always talked about Revo.
Sure.
And then I told you about the other one that I like to use. Now it's escaping my mind, but anyways, I found a new one that I like too. That's really simple, and that's Geek Uninstaller.
Okay, I'm checking it out now.
Geek Uninstaller. Nice.
The best free uninstaller, it says. Okay, what do you like about it?
Well, I like the fact that the problem I have, and this is personal, I don't know if anybody else does, is with Revo, it can get a little hairy once you get in to find your areas to take away the pieces of the registry.
Right.
Okay.
And I find a lot of people get really nervous and go, I don't want to use this program. I'm afraid I'm going to delete something wrong. And
right.
I said, if you do what it says, you won't delete anything wrong, but they still get nervous. They won't use it. So this is another one that goes in and roots it out for you and doesn't show you any more of the registry than it needs to.
Nice.
Interesting. Okay.
So I thought I would suggest that as another uninstaller because I tell people how important it is to use something like this because of how huge the registry gets.
Yeah.
And
right.
down, I said, it can equivalent to walking in the mud and the rain gets heavier, the mud gets thicker and deeper.
Right.
Before you know it, you're walking really slow and so is your computer working really slow.
So, well, I'll definitely check this out after the show. I'm going to leave this tab open in my browser here. Thank you for letting us know.
Yeah, it's an awesome program. So I just thought I'd let people know it's another one that I think is relatively safe. I mean, we always take a chance using stuff like this. But I leave it in the hands of the big people to hope that they're leading us in the right direction.
Sure. Right, exactly. All right, thanks, Mark.
Have a good one, guys.
All right, you too. Geekon installer, we'll check that out.
Oh, I just realized he thinks we're the big people.
What?
That's not right.
Oh, boy.
That'll get you in more trouble than anything else I can think of. But, yeah, you do need some form of uninstaller that does more than Microsoft's uninstaller does. And it sounds like Geek might be a good one. I'll have to check it out. Yeah, absolutely. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jason from somewhere in Pennsylvania. Hiya, Jason. Where are you calling from?
Altoona.
Oh, Altoona, P. Of course you are.
All right, we just need you to turn your radio down, if you could.
Yeah, have you got your radio on there? Because we're hearing an echo.
I don't have it on.
Okay, I'm hearing an echo, and I don't know why. But go ahead. We'll see if we can get through this.
All right. I apologize for the echo, too. But the question I had was, do you know if Steve has gotten a new webcam? I have been listening to the podcast and haven't quite caught up to what's going on lately.
Steve, of course, is not here this week or last week. So there is no update just yet, but we will get those up. As far as the camera goes, he's tried several over the last month and a half, maybe. And so he's still working on it.
All right. What I was calling to suggest, I didn't realize he wasn't going to be here today. The Wyze Cam is like $19, and they have a firmware to convert their security camera into a webcam.
Yep, that's true.
Yep.
And I was just going to suggest that he check that out.
Yeah, that's actually very cool. He's got one, and I've got one. I don't know that they will connect easily to the OBS software that he uses, but yeah, he definitely has one. I know that.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll check into that.
As far as Microsoft uninstallers, I mean, you could burn some incense and wave your hands over the keyboard, and you'd be able to do just as well.
Yeah, you ain't kidding.
Have a good day, and sorry about the echo there.
Thanks, Jason. Have fun down there in Altoona.
We're slowly thawing out.
Yeah.
Us too.
Have a good day, guys.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, it's been an issue. Look, Microsoft's uninstaller really has always had a single huge flaw. And that is, it doesn't actually uninstall anything.
Yeah.
It sets one bit in the registry that says, don't use this area anymore, which is why your registry can grow to 2 gigabytes when you install stuff and then uninstall, install something else, uninstall. It never removes anything.
The amount of times that I uninstall something with Microsoft uninstall or try to, and I go into CCleaner later, and it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
It drives me crazy.
Microsoft, why you no uninstall?
I can't find it. I can't find it, but somewhere it's still in there because CCleaner finds it.
Right. The software is gone. It does do that part right.
Okay.
But it doesn't remove the registry entry, which is important. And so other software thinks, oh, it's still here.
Right.
Just because they said don't use it doesn't mean it isn't here.
Except it isn't.
And so that's why something like a Revo uninstaller and now maybe this Geek uninstaller actually removes the thing from the registry. And as people also often complain that as my machine gets older, it's slower and slower to start up.
Right.
Well, that's because your 200 meg registry is now a 2 gig registry. And every time you start up your machine, it has to A, load 2 gigabytes of data.
Right.
B, sort through those 2 gigabytes of data. And C, decide what to ignore in those 2 gigabytes of data.
Right. So yeah, it's just not optimized.
Right. And Microsoft has never optimized the registry, whereas programs like Revo uninstaller and Geek uninstaller do.
But back to the Wyze camera thing. My day job is working at the Eastman School of Music, and about a year ago, as everybody might remember, we suddenly had to become an online school and do lots of online learning. But so did everybody else on the planet. So there was a run on webcams. And everybody wanted a webcam, and the prices started going up and up and up. And we were trying to figure out, how are we going to get professors and students ready to do this? And we went so far as to look at cameras. They were approaching $200 per camera. And this is for, you know, a little Logitech camera that you used to get for 60 or 70 bucks.
Yep.
And we said, well, I'm not saying we won't spend the money on those, but let's look at our options. And I remember reading about the Wyze camera and that they were releasing a firmware that you could put on the camera itself that essentially turned it into a 1080p webcam. And I said, oh, this is fantastic. How much are those Wyze cameras? Thinking that they'd be 50, 60 bucks.
Right.
No, 20 bucks.
29 bucks. Yep.
And it was incredible. So we snapped up a bunch of those. And I've got
your
one at
wife
home.
Couldn't get one.
and I still haven't put the firmware on it yet, but I'm very interested in doing that because I think my son is very interested in getting a webcam running on his new rig.
Yep. So and of course, if you've got a laptop or a phone,
sure,
you've got a webcam.
Yes.
But many desktops, of course, the monitors do not have a webcam built in.
Right. Yeah, it's very uncommon to buy a monitor that has a built-in webcam.
Right. So you do need an external one. And so many people, particularly in their homes, if they've got a desktop unit, they've never bothered to get a webcam. Why?
Right.
Now, of course, we know why.
That's right. Yeah. You're in your house and for good reasons.
Yeah. I had a very, very nice 1080p high resolution, yada, yada, yada. Did not work well.
No?
And then I got a Logitech, much less expensive, 1080p, high resolution, yada, yada, yada. Works like a champ.
Yeah.
I think I just got a bad camera.
And the microphones on those are really good, too.
Microphones are good. Well, I have a headset with a mic.
Oh, good.
Because when I'm doing Zoom-type stuff, mm-hmm. any sort of video chatting, it's cleaner sound.
Yeah.
For both me and the other person, if you've got a headset with a boom mic on it.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, you don't get as much room audio.
Right.
Or the effects of that. Yeah, right. Boom mic is always a good upgrade.
I do a meeting regularly with any number of people. And when dogs and kids and spouses and
life
is in the background, it's disruptive.
Right.
But having the headset makes that less so. And people need to learn when they need to mute their mics.
Yes.
And if you get up to use the facilities, turn off your camera.
And mute your mic, especially if you've got one of those wireless ones.
Yes.
Nobody wants to hear the toilet flush. Come on, people.
Nobody needs to hear that. But yeah, so you need to be a little more aware of video chat etiquette.
Right. Well, yeah, you know, they didn't really teach me that in school. It didn't exist.
Right, right.
So everybody was learning all at once. And I think, you know, keeping yourself muted while you're on a conversation is really important to know and to learn where that button is and how to unmute yourself also. So those are, I think we all learned together, and feel free to gently nudge those who might need a little etiquette lesson.
I do some video chats with people who are professionals. Professional audio people, professional radio people, professional television people, professional on-air talent. And they're the worst. They are absolutely the worst.
It's like the doctors make the worst patients kind of situation.
Yes, exactly. Well, large part of it is they're not actually the technicians. You know, when you get an audio technician or a video technician in a video chat,
yeah,
they're perfect.
They've got the Cadillac of all the equipment. And
you know, by just unconsciously, if the door opens, they hit the mute button.
Right.
It's automatic. You know, if the door behind them opens, click, and they're talking to that person, they come back and they turn it back. They don't even think about it.
Right. Meanwhile,
but, you know, video people, on air people, whether it's camera or audio, there's a Michael Oden who does the work for them. And so they're just chit-chatting away, and then maybe they'll look down and see if the red light is on before they swear, but that's about it. You know, so I get it, but it's very weird. So people, pay attention to your video, pay attention to your audio, pay attention to what the other person is going to see.
That's right.
When you're on a video chat of any sort. Speaking of video chats, you can join us tomorrow night at 9 o'clock. In the Soundbites Lounge, courtesy of Mastermind Lounge.
Now, how do you get there?
you go to soundbites.org/lounge.
Slash lounge, okay.
And at 9 p.m., there will be a link. Right now, there is not a link because you can't go there.
But there will be.
But there will be at 9 p.m. tomorrow night. And everybody listening is, and even if you're not listening, you're welcome to join us. We'll be there from 9 to 10, answering people's computer questions, chit-chatting about various movies and television and books.
Ah, okay.
If there are no computer questions, and we generally just have a nice time for the hour. And if you're an Ask Nick newsletter member, we do that on Wednesday night in Nick's Lounge.
Very nice.
Which is a different place, and you need to be a member of Ask Nick to go there. But other than that, it's very similar.
That's right.
Very similar. So,
that's tomorrow night for the Soundbites Lounge, 9 o'clock.
Tomorrow night's for the Soundbites Lounge. So please feel free to join us. And at 9 p.m., soundbites.org/lounge will bring up the link.
Sure.
So just refresh your screen at 9 p.m. and you will see it, and you'll get to go there.
Sit down with your favorite beverage.
Sit down with whatever favorite beverage you like. That's the other thing, watching people eat on camera during meetings. That's interesting. People are in their homes.
That's right.
And so they're comfortable. Relaxed.
They're very comfortable.
And they really don't think about what it looks like to the other people.
Yes.
I do understand that. All right. That music tells us you've wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense, but don't go away, because we've got a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. We'll have more Michael Oden, not enough Dennis Worster, and
never.
Way too much Nick Francesco.
Yep.
So we're going to take a slightly longer break.
Nick's got to do his yoga, so we're going to take a slightly longer break.
I'm going to do my yoga, downward donut, I believe it's called, because that's where that donut is going to go. And then we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. You are listening to Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we can, in fact, with your such generous support, continue to be member supported. Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 6 minutes after the hour...
Are you feeling all stretched out?
I am. I did my downward donut and I feel better.
Oh, good.
And we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Actually, I did not have a donut. I have been losing weight. I've lost 70 pounds.
Oh, very good.
And I'm on a plateau now.
Okay.
Plateau. As
those are
anybody
annoying.
Who's losing weight knows that the plateaus are the worst.
Yes. It's like, come on.
Because there's no reward.
That's right.
On the other hand, I didn't gain weight. So I suppose that's something.
That's true.
Right? But still.
That would be even worse.
if you're doing, and that's happened to me.
Yeah.
That's happened to me. There's no doubt of that.
Not just you, I'm sure.
Right.
So what's going on in the news?
Oh, well, Huawei.
Yes, Huawei.
Huawei, which is a computer manufacturer.
I think they're from out of town.
They're from out of town, and they've been hit. Huawei plans to start charging big smartphone makers like Samsung and Apple royalties for the use of its various 5G related patents. Huawei is seeking to make up some of the losses that it has experienced as a result of the U.S. government's move to sanction the company and limit its availability to sell products in the American market. The U.S. government says national security concerns have driven the policy.
Yeah.
Apple and Samsung would each have to pay up to $2.50 per smartphone sold. Do the math.
Yeah,
that's a bucket load of cash.
It's not nothing.
It's not nothing. With Huawei promising to cap it there and keep rates lower than competitors like Qualcomm or Nokia. For example, Nokia has capped its licensing rate at about $358 per unit. Huawei expects to fetch between $1.2 and $1.3 billion with a B dollars in total fees for 2019 through 2021. An intellectual property research firm called Gray B is claiming that Huawei has the largest number of declared 5G patent families of any company at 3,007, and that at 18.3% of those are in use. Samsung and Apple will be Huawei's biggest sources for 5G patent revenue, at least in the near term, as they are currently the top two smartphone companies in the world, and both have overhauled their lineups to focus on 5G phones over the past year. Before the U.S. sanctions and other developments, Huawei was second to Samsung in the smartphone market, but by the end of 2020, Huawei fell to third and Apple took its place. 5G's rollout is still nascent throughout much of the globe, and today's 5G smartphones have drawbacks like relatively poor battery life. But industry analysts maintain a general consensus that 5G will be one of the primary technologies driving sales, revenue, and adoption throughout the tech industry in the coming years. For that reason, 5G patents are expected to be quite valuable moving forward. Both Apple and Samsung use 5G modems made by Qualcomm at present, but Huawei's patents are still in play. Apple plans to develop its own modems to replace Qualcomm's in future phones, but it is likely to still depend on patents by companies like Huawei and Qualcomm to deliver 5G connectivity. So, are you using 5G? What do you think? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Right. Do you remember Huawei, let's see, I think it was the previous president put a ban on Huawei and a few other manufacturers because there was concern about national security.
Right.
There was, and admittedly, there was no hard proof, but they were accused of making devices that had the ability to spy on people, and the governments were buying these things. So there was a lot of concern about that. So the previous president decided that that was not a good place to do business, and elected to restrict that.
Right. Of course, the reality is that 90% of all the components in every electronic device are made in
Korea. Not in the U.S.
Right. Korea or Japan or China or Thailand or Laos or Taiwan or somewhere. And so any one of them. And of course, all of those devices have the capability of spying on you.
Right.
For some reason, and we don't know the real reason, Huawei was singled out and prevented from doing a lot of stuff, and so this is their way of continuing operations and making money. I get it; they need to make money, and if they have a patent that they paid for,
yep,
or created themselves, then certainly they have the right. And in fact, obligation to their
shareholders, right?
To their shareholders to do that.
To defend that.
Right. So we'll see where that comes out in the future. But
in the short term, that could be a giant stream of revenue that they didn't have so far. So.
And it may raise our prices for our devices.
It may. I don't know by how much.
A couple of bucks anyway.
At a minimum.
Make it more.
Plus the overhead for dealing with it.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Josh from Fairport, New York. Hi, Josh. What's up?
Yeah, hi, guys. My first time calling. I just had a basic question because I'm not real deep into the stuff. I just had a question about my Mac desktop.
Okay.
And it just seems like sometimes I go to bring it back from sleep, waking it up, and it feels like ages. It just doesn't want to really do anything. And sometimes it works totally fine.
Okay. Tell me more about your desktop. How recent is it?
It's, I just checked. It's, it says late 2015.
Okay.
It's running High Sierra.
Uh-huh.
And, it's got the 1.6 gigahertz Core i5.
Okay. All right. So, wake from sleep issues are not uncommon. There is a piece of hardware inside that keeps track of when your computer is awake and when it's asleep. And sometimes that the system that runs that can need to be reset. And there is a procedure that you can use to reset that. And what I'll do is I'll hand off a link to that page that describes how to do it.
Okay.
It's a page that's on Apple's site. I'll hand off the link to Nick, and he'll put it on the soundbites.org webpage so you can check it out.
Oh, great. Awesome.
Yeah. Yep. Usually a quick reset will make it behave much better when it goes to wake up.
Yeah. And oftentimes there will be long stretches of time where it's seems totally fine, and then kind of at sudden it'll just become very sluggish. Just like, you know, you'll go to open up anything like Chrome, for example, and it'll just sit there like it's thinking about it. So
I've seen that too. Usually there are several dozen things that are happening in the background that your computer is doing that don't show anything on the screen. So it's difficult to figure out what could it possibly be working on.
Well, it's also possible that if at certain times you're going to also put the hard drive to sleep.
Yeah.
And if it's in real deep sleep, then it has to start up the hard drive.
Right.
It has to come out of sleep. It has to start up the hard drive. It has to then load the operating system back in. It has to load whatever you were doing back in, and then it'll show it to you.
Right.
And if your hard drive is sort of slow.
Yeah, that can be. You said it's a desktop Mac. Is it an iMac machine? Or is it a Mac Mini?
It's an iMac.
Okay. The iMacs, some of them came with a type of storage on the inside that actually has some moving pieces. It has a platter that spins. It's about 3.5 inches across and spins about 7,200 RPM. And when your computer goes to sleep, it turns off the motor that the spinning device uses in order to save electricity and to save wear and tear. But when you wake up the computer, you know, sees that you tapped a key on the keyboard or wiggled the mouse. It receives the signal and says, okay, it's time to wake up. And the first thing it does is it fires off that motor to spin up that drive again so it can read and write from it. I'm sorry, read from it and write to it. And that takes a little bit of time. Sure. But again, you've probably noticed that sometimes it's faster than others. And there may be things that it was working on right before it went to sleep that it didn't quite finish, or that it needs to work on before it can be ready for you. And sometimes those can take a little bit longer than we might expect.
It's like It's like if somebody comes to your door. If you're just sitting in a chair reading,
you get up.
You get up and you answer the door, you're done.
Right.
But if you were in bed.
Or, on the sofa with the blanket over you, snoozing.
Right. By the time you wake up enough and
stretch,
get the sleep out of your eyes and maybe throw on a robe so you're at least semi-decent, it takes you longer to get to the door. And it's the same idea with your computer.
I see. That makes a lot of sense.
All right. So I'll get that link over to Nick, and he'll get it on the webpage for you, and you'll be all set.
Great. Thanks so much, guys. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Josh.
All right. Take care.
Yep. Bye-bye.
It's always nice to get a first-time caller.
It always is nice. We like that. We have to understand that we get so used to instant gratification. As I'm always saying, instant gratification isn't fast enough anymore. But the fact is that...
Yeah. Patience. When do we learn that?
Yeah, right. We want patience. When do we want it? Now. But the fact is that particularly if you still have, and of course now that we get SSD cards in so many devices.
Sure, flash storage, man.
Flash storage is fast.
Speedy.
But in many cases we still have spinning drives.
Yeah.
And those are slower inherently. And if you have a slower spinning drive, it's that much slower again.
Right.
And if you've put it to sleep, it doesn't want to, by design, it doesn't instantly spin up. It takes a few milliseconds or half a second or maybe a second to spin up to full speed so that it doesn't shock the system and kill it in some way.
Right. Well, and it may be reading in, what do they call that, the VM sleep image.
Right. And so what
the contents of memory were before it went to sleep, it's got to read that back in.
Yeah, and then it's got to organize it, and then it's got to present it to you. So that takes
the last thing anyone wants is my last laptop where I woke it up one day. It woke up. I heard a click and the entire thing went out in the...
Oh, no.
Yep.
Entire motherboard crashed.
Oh. Yep.
And that was it. That was the end of it.
That happens. Luckily, you had backups.
Yes.
Yep. That's important. I reset up my wife's backup system. I bought pCloud for her.
Oh, okay.
And somehow, I don't know what happened. She turned it off somehow. So I turned it back on again. And so now she's all backed up and I feel much safer.
Do you do local backups or cloud or both?
pCloud is cloud backup.
Okay.
But I do both.
Okay.
pCloud is very cool because it is automated.
Right.
Which means she doesn't have to do anything. She doesn't have to think about it.
Yeah.
You know, as long as she puts it in somewhere in her directory. I said, what directories do you use? And I put all of those to pCloud.
Right. And as long as she saves things there,
right,
you're going to be good.
She's good. I told her, you know, if you save things on the desktop, you're kind of on your own.
Right.
I could put that in, but...
That varies so much if you're pulling things to and from it.
So, yeah, I made sure that works. And hers is working, and it's I feel much safer. So, again, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, backups.
Yep.
Backups. You do not have enough backups. We know this. Get more of them. If you head on over, as we've said before, to asknick.com/backup.php. That's also, I think, the number one link on our webpage, I think. I should know that. I think I would actually know that. Apparently, I do not.
Well, backups are super important because the big thing that I think about is, as a dad, the pictures of my kids that I have from when they were born through, you know, last week, I don't have the negatives for those. I can't get more prints made. I have the files that my digital camera or the fancy phone on my the fancy camera on my phone took. And that's it. That's what I have. That's the legacy of those days gone by. And I need those to stick around. You know,
right.
They're important to me. So having multiple copies of them in different places is a great way to try and preserve those. So trying to have at least one copy or multiple copies in my house plus a copy somewhere else, whether that's in the cloud or whether that's on a drive that I hand off to someone else so they can keep it in their house. Helps me feel a lot better about that kind of thing.
Right. I have 1, 2, 3, 4 backups right now because one of them died. And that happens.
Right.
I had a NAS drive, a network attached storage drive on my network.
And that, when that happens, and you shrug because you've got the other three.
Exactly right. Got the other four.
I'm sorry, the other four.
Yeah. So I've only got four. I've only got four right now.
Only?
But I learned, well, as I say on that backup page, the number one lesson I learned is you don't have enough backups.
Right.
You do not have enough. I don't care how many you have. You don't have enough.
Right.
That's an axiom.
Well, it's a lot like my dentist would always say, you know, only brush the teeth you want to keep.
Right.
And right. It's only backup the data you want to keep.
But I've got a number of, on that website, if you're not doing backup now, first, shame on you. Shame on you. Secondly, For all the major operating systems, Windows, Macintosh, Linux, Android, and iOS, I have a list of backup software. Some of it is free. Some of it costs money. You decide how you want to deal with it. Some of it is free and premium, or freemium, as they say.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
For some, I don't know why it's a portmanteau. They like it. But a number of them are available. For example, on the Mac, we talk about Time Machine. That's actually built in.
It's true.
But it only does local backup.
It only does local backup. It does not have a cloud option. I would love for them to do it.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah. I've been comboing. I do the comboing Time Machine for local stuff to a local drive that just sits back behind my computer and I don't worry about it.
Right.
And then I do a cloud tool on top of that called Backblaze. I like them because they've got a nice Mac native client.
Yep, that's here too. It's $5 really a month nice. For a computer.
Yeah, not that expensive. And periodically they'll run deals where if you buy a whole year's worth of service at once, you know, right around Black Friday or something, they'll get you a super bargain. Also makes a nice gift.
Yes, it does. And that P-Cloud, of course, is a lifetime subscription.
Oh, very good.
You pay it once and you're done.
Okay.
Either half a terabyte or 2 terabytes.
Right.
And it's pretty nice. And it works on Windows, Mac, and Linux. And it's one of those set it and forget it, just like Backblaze is. And all five of those operating systems have a number of backup options available to them, and you should take advantage of those. You don't have enough backups. There's nothing, I've said this many times, there's nothing that breaks my heart more than somebody coming and saying, my pictures of my grandkids.
Right.
You know, I've lost them. What do I do? Well, you don't do anything now. I'm sorry, but that's the fact. You could have done something a week ago, even.
Right. Maybe you can take the drive and send it off to a company that specializes in data recovery.
Like DriveSaver.
Yeah. Here's the thing. That's going to run you $1,500, $2,000, $3,000. And that's right. And that's for them to make an attempt.
It used to be, and I haven't looked lately, and I'm sure it's more now, but it used to be $1,000 just to look at the drive.
Yeah.
That doesn't include recovery. That's just to look and say, can we recover data from this?
Right.
$1,000.
Yeah. The one I dealt with recently, you mail them the drive, they talk to you 24 hours or 48 hours later, and they say, all right, we think we can do it. The question becomes, how fast do you want it back? And if you need it back sooner, you pay more. And they don't claim that they can get everything back, but it's not cheap.
Right.
And I don't know if your homeowner's insurance is going to cover that kind of thing, but it's...
Right.
It's something to keep in mind. It's so much easier to just make an extra copy in advance, and so much cheaper, too.
And when you set up something like pCloud or whatever, you don't even have to think about it anymore. It's just there.
Yeah. Backblaze just sends me an email once a week. It says, yep, we've got 100% of all your stuff.
Yep.
Everything's going great.
Thank you. Have fun.
Yep. And I
say,
all right, cool. And I go and turn around and go work on something else.
If you are not backing up in multiple places, every night when you go to bed, in the back of your head, you should hear tick, 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 because there's a time bomb just waiting to go off somewhere in one of your systems.
Right. Well, and the other thing to factor in is if you're using a tool like Dropbox or Box.com or Google Drive or iCloud Drive that synchronizes back to your computer, you know, you're one deletion away from that deletion cascading to all of your other Dropbox items or folders. And you may be able to get that back if you notice it soon enough. Sometimes they'll keep a deletion history at the company themselves, and you might be able to pull it back.
Right. pCloud has a versioning, they call it, mm-hmm. the same thing.
Yeah, and sometimes that window isn't as long as you think. It might only be 30 days. So right. If you notice it 90 days later or a year later and say, hey, man, what happened to my fill-in-the-blank? You may be out of luck.
I have one of the things that I do have 5 backups because I just set up an old laptop that a friend of mine gave me. He just decided he didn't want it anymore. And it had a big enough hard drive to hold my important stuff.
Okay.
Pictures.
Yes.
And of course, I'm still using Google Photos.
Yes.
Because I'm a Pixel owner, I still get the unlimited data, which is nice. Oh, and here, thank
yes,
you.
Yes, and that's another thing to factor in is if you are taking the vast majority of your pictures with your phone, which makes sense because it has very nice cameras on them these days, you need a way to get those pictures off of your phone and onto some other place. If your phone falls into a mud puddle or, you know, gets run over by a car or gets lost or destroyed or who knows what happens to it. You need those pictures to live somewhere else because they may not be unrecoverable.
That's right. And also, for Pete's sake, if you do have your pictures on a phone and you think it's being backed up, go look once in a while.
Yeah, prove it.
Right, because I
to
know
yourself.
People who have somehow turned that off, either whether it was an iPhone or an Android phone. They had somehow stopped saving them to the cloud.
Right. And it may not tell you, hey, by the way, I haven't done this in a little while.
Right.
It just may fail silently, and that's the worst.
And that's the worst. So go check and make sure it's... First, go check. Just go look.
Yes.
I mean, in
Photos.google.com.
Photos.google.com or...
Apple's iCloud Drive.
iCloud Drive. And then you can see them there. and see what's been backed up and what's not. Also, some people don't back up their photos on cell data.
Yes.
And that's fair, particularly if you're paying.
Yeah,
you know,
for the data. You
have limited cell data.
Mm-hmm.
But that means you have to be aware that you may have taken some pictures that are not backed up till you get back to your Wi-Fi.
Right.
Your Wi-Fi at home.
Yeah.
So be aware of all of those things. You take a bunch of pictures at a party and somehow drop your phone.
Yes.
In the water at the party, you've lost those pictures.
Right. Yes. Nick and I want you to be happy.
We want you to be happy, and we definitely
and we can help you be happy. But you gotta listen. Backups.
Yes.
We want to help you. We'll even take your questions. We'll help you talk about what's a good thing to try and what's not as much fun or as helpful. So give us a call. Talk to us about backups. We would be happy to talk with you in advance about backups. But when you call us and there's nothing we can do, oof, that's a tougher conversation.
Yep. All right. I think we're about to take a break. Yes, we are.
All right. More yoga for Nick.
Good.
Yes, call in and suggest which yoga poses Nick should try next.
That's right. Let me know. We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dennis Worster, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour.
Warrior pose.
We're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's Sound Bites right here on member supported Jazz 90.1. We'll be right back.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Temperatures in the 50s. It's spring.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful day in my neighborhood. I'll tell you that right now. I hope you're going to go out and enjoy this, but of course, not until after you've called 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And joined us right here on Soundbites, just like Joe did from Pittsford, New York. Hiya, Joe. What's up?
Hello, folks. I have a question for Dennis.
Oh boy.
I had a call from a friend who was a Mac user for a long time who had just upgraded to Big Sur.
Okay.
And he was not able to find his files. He could spotlight search for them, but he could not find his files in the Finder. During the course of his research, he found, using the disk utility, that underneath his Macintosh HD, there is something called data.
Right.
I have just purchased a Mac Mini,
mm-hmm.
and I've been in the PC world mainly for the last 25 years, but also going into the disk utility, I see Macintosh HD, and underneath that, something called data. But what is that?
Ah, you okay.
What's there? How do you access it?
Thank you for this. When people call us and they say, hey, I've got a question for you, come here a minute,
yeah.
I always go, gulp. But luckily, this is one that I can answer, so I'm feeling much better already.
I suspect there are very few questions you can't answer.
Well, I'm paid to Google well.
Yeah, exactly.
If all else fails, my fingers are fast, and I'm good at skimming. So here's the deal. Apple, several years ago, said, you know what? We are doubling down on security. We are going to make sure that the information that lives on your drive is stuff that you put there, that you know when applications are trying to access information that you might think is private. We're going to make sure that nobody messes with no malware messes with the operating system from the time it leaves Apple until the time it gets to your machine and runs. And this is Big Sur is the latest version of their intention to continue on that promise. And here's what's going down. Apple's intention is that they want to segregate the operating system away from your data. They want to be able to know that the operating system that you got directly from Apple hasn't changed since it left Apple and when it got written to your machine, and they want to keep that as a read-only volume. They don't want applications to be able to go in and make any adjustments. In fact, they've recently told printer manufacturers and other companies that make what they call kernel extensions or other drivers, hey, by the way, you're not going to be able to do that anymore. You've got to come up with a new plan. And many companies are kind of scrambling to make that work. But Apple's really serious about this. They're not messing around. And what you're seeing there is the segregation of the operating system against your data. When you are in tools like Disk Utility, you get to kind of see behind the curtain and see how things are separated. But day to day, you should not notice any difference about how your computer runs or how you get to programs or how they work. You might notice that periodically your computer will say, hey, this program wants to be able to access your photos, or this program wants to be able to access your contacts. And you might have to agree to that or to approve that. But in general, this is actually a good thing, believe it or not.
So what is data?
Data is where your home folder lives, and your home folder contains everything about you on the computer. So it contains your documents, it contains your photos and movies, it contains your music, it contains all of the things that are specific to you that you have created or downloaded that are not things that came directly from Apple.
I can't specifically access a data folder.
That's right. Yep, the data, you said you were from the PC world. You might remember being able to make a C drive and a D drive and an E drive and different partitions
right,
on a disk. You can think of the data volume as its own volume, its own partition.
But you
disk.
Should still be able to get at it through like the pictures folder or whatever the equivalent
right.
is.
Right. The OS abstracts all that away. So you get to your home folder the same way. It's very rare that you would actually specify, hey, I want to write specifically to the data drive. The OS handles that transparently.
But if you open your home folder, you should still see all your stuff.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. Okay. Very good. And I wanted to comment on a couple of things. You guys were talking about backups.
Yes, yes.
Nick, I only have four on my PC.
Slacker.
Come on, man.
Slacker.
three local and one in the cloud.
So good.
Maybe I have to rethink that. In the past, though, backups have really helped us. My wife ran her business off a Mac, and, you know, as they do, her hard drive went. Yep. Everything about her business was on that hard drive, but we had a backup, put in a new hard drive, files back.
Yeah.
Isn't that the most beautiful thing?
Drives. Back in my early Mac days, I had a hard drive go, and what do you call the Mac backup?
Time Machine is the one that's built in.
So, yeah, the internal drive and the Time Machine drive went at the same time.
Oh, no.
Fortunately, I had the third drive. This was before the days of cloud backup.
Right.
So backup, 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 folks. You
That's
can't
right.
Back up enough.
It's not just us
okay,
saying
okay,
it.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate all you do.
Yeah.
Thank you, Joe.
Thanks for that call.
Take care. Right. Yep,
bye-bye. Yeah. In fact, every operating system abstracts that stuff. So your home directory on Windows
yep.
is actually under /user/your name,
mm-hmm.
etc. And on Linux, it's in /home/your username.
Right. Yeah, and the Mac is just abstracting it to a different volume.
Right, right. And they're just abstracting it to data instead of to the... My home is on a different drive, as a matter of fact,
uh-huh.
from my operating system.
Sure, yes.
And what's nice about that is because I can then back up that entire drive without touching my
right.
main drive. So... For example, when I replaced my two spinning drives with two SSD drives,
mm-hmm.
I on the 1 terabyte drive, I installed the operating system again, fresh, brand new, because that's the way I wanted to do it. And
okay.
I keep a document that tells me everything that's on my machine and how and when I installed it and everything else. So I was able to just follow that and reinstall all my stuff.
Good.
And then I just copied from the spinning 2 terabyte drive to the solid state 2 terabyte drive.
Right.
And my system was like it was the day before.
Great.
Easy, simple, convenient, fast. And really what saved me is that site book. I learned a long time ago, when you build a new machine, when you add something, when you change something, you put all the information you need into the site book. So yep. If you ever have to recreate that system, you just go through the site book, follow it step by step by step.
And for people, the site book is kind of an industry term that basically means here's a list of how we built this. And in case something happens,
all the pieces and parts, how we put them together.
Right. How we configured them, what we changed the settings to. And, you know, if you you should be able to rebuild a system based on that when you're done.
And in fact, I had that issue when it first booted up. It did a very strange thing and didn't work right. And I remembered, oh, yeah, I looked in my site book and I said, all right, I got to go into this file and add this.
Yes.
I did that, rebooted, perfect.
Site book is you being kind to your future self.
Exactly.
It's a present that you give to your future self.
That's exactly right. And I learned that many, many decades ago. And it's also for when you're in business, it's for whoever comes after you.
Yep. So you can be promoted.
Right. And I've said this before, when it's 3 a.m. and your system has crashed and you have to rebuild it.
Yes, before 9 a.m.
You don't want to think.
Nope, you just want
to
execute.
You want to go to that site book and say, oh, yeah, step one, step two, step three.
Right.
That's all you want to do at 3 a.m.
That's right.
And that works. So, yeah, be aware that that's how that works and that that's what you have to do. Here's a welcome, I think, piece of information.
Okay.
Windows 10.
I've heard of it.
Is a decent enough operating system these days.
Sure.
There are people who still prefer 7, but it's far from perfect. I know that's a shock. I hope you weren't driving. One of the biggest frustrations users have with the operating system is that many pre-installed bloatware apps that few people use, such as Paint 3D.
Yep. Internet Explorer.
Great, oh, yeah. That'll always be there. But fortunately, starting with Windows 10's upcoming Sun Valley update,
okay,
Microsoft will begin removing some of these unwanted programs for new installations anyway. This means that post-Sun Valley, anytime you reinstall Windows 10 on your computer, install it for the first time on a different device, you'll no longer see programs like 3D Viewer and Paint 3D in the list of pre-installed apps.
Okay, sounds good.
It's not hard to see why Microsoft chose these two programs in particular. The Windows 10 user base is incredibly varied, and both of these apps are simply too niche to appeal to everyone, which the ideal pre-installed app should. For example, we can all benefit from Windows 10 calculator and calendar apps. Well, I say we all, not me, but other people. Paint 3D and 3D Viewer have already been removed from the pre-installed app list in the latest Windows 10 Insider build, starting with version 2.1.3.3.2. So it's unlikely that the company will change its mind here. To be clear, this does not mean that these apps are being shut out entirely. As mentioned before, this change only applies to fresh installs. Those who already have Paint 3D and 3D Viewer on their systems will be able to keep them if they so choose. Furthermore, the app will remain available in the Microsoft Store moving forward. Not everybody uses them,
right,
but they will be available to you. This is a minor change, all things considered, but we're still pretty happy to see that Microsoft is streamlining the new user experience somewhat. Bloatware is bad enough when it comes from a PC builder like Alienware or HP, but it's even more frustrating when it's both built into the OS itself, completely useless for those customers. And, oh, by the way, when you can't remove it.
Yeah.
As you can't on Samsung phone. So what's your bloatware candidate for removal? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Just like Joe did from Pittsford, New York. Joe, is this you again?
Hey, it's me back again. Nick, you were talking about recovering from problems, and that reminded me of something. As I mentioned, I have 4 backups. 2 of my backups are done with software called Macrium, which creates disk images. And so when there's a problem, and you know they crop up occasionally, all I have to do is tell Macrium to recover back to the previous day or the previous week, and it brings everything back just exactly as it was. It's just amazing. It has saved my butt many times. So I want to throw that out. Having software that images your disks and then allows you to recover, probably it takes me 20 minutes to recover a hard drive when something goes wrong. which is kind of amazing. So I want to throw that up for you as another method. Also, you know, keep track of what you do on your software installations, but having an image backup really can save your butt.
Right.
It's true.
Thanks, Joe. One of the things, Macrium Backup is an excellent piece of software, and I'm pretty sure it's on my backup page, too. The one thing you have to be aware of is that depending on why you are re-imaging your system, don't use a system image.
Well, yeah, I mean,
install from fresh. So
usually it's in case of hardware failure, right?
Right,
if
right.
your drive fails, you buy a new drive, you lay the image back onto it, and you're good to go.
Right. But if you're re-imaging because you had a virus,
right.
don't use that image because it may have the virus already in it. So you have to be aware of why. And Joe is right, and as is Dennis. If your thing dies and it was running fine, then something like Macrium Backup or any sort of disk image will be fine.
Yep, we have one on the Mac called Super Duper, and another one called Carbon Copy Cloner. That
right,
will make file binary identical copies from one machine to it, or one drive to another.
But you do need to make sure your machine is clean before you make those backups.
Right.
And that's why I don't particularly bother.
Yeah.
You know, I just, because, well, and also on Linux, it's so fast and so easy. Linux itself is fast and easy, and I'm on gigabit Ethernet, so
I would
that's
say,
fast and easy.
If it's a business, if you're using your computer to make money, to turn your time and talent into money, then having protection against hardware failure makes a lot of sense. And it's nice to have a backup that you update periodically and keep it on the shelf so that if something bad happens, it keeps a disaster. It turns that into inconvenience rather than a disaster.
Right. And you know, so many times over the years, people bring me disks or machines or thumb drives. Oh, I've, my only copy is on this.
Well, right. Zip disks.
You know, I've always helped them. I always try to be polite. But somewhere in the back of my head, I'm thinking, if you didn't care enough about your data to back it up, why should I?
Right.
I'm sorry, but that's...
It's what we call a best effort. Yeah, I'll give it a shot, but, you know, I'm not going to make any promises.
Well, and that's the other thing. I can't promise.
Right.
You know, and particularly, you know, it's my thesis. It's my only copy of my thesis.
Yes.
Okay, let me get this straight. You couldn't spend $5 on another thumb drive to back up your thesis.
Right.
But I can spend 2 weeks of my time getting it back.
Right. And it's this thing that, you spent, a year and a half, 2 years of your life compiling, composing, drafting, revising, researching.
Yeah.
If it's worth it, it's worth it.
We insisted that faculty keep their data in certain folders so that when they hooked up to the network, we automatically backed them up.
Right.
Boom. Done.
Yep.
And we'd have people who'd come to us and say, I don't have a backup of this. So, okay, we got it on the, no, you don't, because I didn't put it in that folder.
Right.
Well, okay, then. You didn't want it backed up.
Then
that's perfectly fair. But you didn't want it backed up. It wasn't backed up. Congratulations.
Right. Yeah. Our magic extends to only so far.
Right. Right. All you had to do was put it in the documents folder, just anywhere in the documents folder, which is where it automatically wants to go to begin with. You purposely moved it somewhere else, and now you're surprised that it wasn't backed up.
Right.
I'm a little confused by that.
Well, we want to help you. If you follow the rules, all's good.
That's right.
If you don't follow the rules, all bets are off.
That's right. So, back up. Will you, for Pete's sake, back up, back up, back up. About half the calls we used to get were backup calls.
Sure.
The entire job of a tech support person is to put themselves out of business. To make sure your machine is running so well, you never need to call them.
That's right. In fact, that is what I call the prime directive in my department at Eastman. The prime directive is do whatever it takes and spend whatever it takes to keep the phone quiet.
Yep, that's exactly right.
And my team likes that, and I like that. And in general, things that helps guide all of our decisions, and it works really well for us.
Yep. And I used to tell my same thing I told my programmers. I don't care if it takes you 20 hours. If it saves every one of our people 1 minute, we make that time back.
Oh, several fold.
Several fold. So do the work.
Yep.
And it's the same with backups. Spend 1 minute backing your data up. Spend $175 to buy a lifetime supply of cloud backup that you don't ever have to think about again. And you're ahead of the game.
It's true.
And that's what you need to do. And you're right. If you need multiple backups, if you're a company, you need offsite backups, you need detached backups because there's ransomware and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
But the average person really is backing up against a hardware failure.
Yeah.
So something like pCloud, which does backup and does versioning. So if you accidentally delete a file, you can get it back. Things like that. Doing the same thing to a local storage medium, that sort of fare is really going to keep you clean in about 99% of the cases.
Right, right. And maybe push your photos to a photo-specific cloud, you know, like Google Photos or Amazon, I'm sure has similar things, or Apple's tools. It's worth, and they're charging very, very reasonable prices. I think it's like a couple bucks a month for gigs and gigs and gigs worth of space.
Well, I'm saving all of my data to pCloud, and it's just even my pictures, my documents, everything goes to pCloud, and it makes me happy.
Yeah, and you're covered. It's one less thing to worry about, and you check on it once in a while, make sure it's doing what it says it's doing, and then you just move on with life and worry about something else. It's when you need it, it'll be there. And if something bad happens, you say, oh, and you shrug and you go take care of it. And it's not a big deal.
I rearranged a couple of folders yesterday and thought, do you know what? I don't know if pCloud does that rearrangement.
Okay.
So I went and looked, and yes, it did. It is a faithful duplicate of my hard drive.
Very good.
So I was very pleased about that. If I erase something here, it erases it there, but I have versioning.
Right.
If I move something here, it moves it there. So my drive, my pCloud drive, looks exactly like my home directory on my system. Again, I don't bother backing up the
OS and
the
applications.
Operating system directory. Yeah.
You just want your data files.
I just want my files.
Which are big, yeah. And that collection's big enough. There's no reason to grab everything. You could do, like we were talking about before, you can do a whole disk clone if you need to.
Right.
But it's nice to just grab what you need. And the other thing that's nice is that a lot of these companies will let you restore and view your things on your tablet or on your phone if they're being written to the cloud. You can get a listing of those.
And pCloud will do that as well.
Oh, good.
So I can do at least some of that. But yeah, and it becomes, it essentially, you can make it look like a drive.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a pCloud drive, so I can actually go get something or put something if I want to. It happens automatically, but I can go look at it and change things around, do what I want with it. It's a pretty good deal. I used it the other day to move a file that I couldn't. I had a thumb drive that was dying.
Right.
And there was nothing on it that was important, but I could read it on one machine. I couldn't read it on the other.
All right. Before we end, quick question.
Yes.
You have an older house.
I do.
And you have Wi-Fi in it?
I do.
Are you using a mesh network?
I am not. But that's only because I have an Orbi, which is incredibly powerful.
Okay.
And it works everywhere in my house except in the library, because there's a curved wall with chicken wire.
Chicken wire, yeah.
But it is a two-station network.
Okay.
It's not really mesh.
Yeah, yeah. It's a couple of stations that broadcast the same SSID, the same wireless network.
So essentially, yes, I have a mesh.
Technically, network. Yes.
Yeah, same idea.
Borderline.
Yeah, why?
Well, I'm just thinking, I moved my router down to the basement, and 5 gigahertz was no longer acceptable performance-wise, so I moved it back up, and now things are good again, but we could talk more about that another time.
Yeah, we absolutely will.
I would like that.
That music tells us that this show is over for the week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank everybody who voted in the poll. We've got 43 votes. I'd like to see that go much higher. So you can do that at soundbites.org. In the upper left, you'll see that poll. I want to thank Michael Oden, who did an amazing
Yay,
job
Michael.
On the Woo! On the board today. I want to thank Dennis Worster, who always, it's a joy to have you here.
Oh, thank you. Happy to be here.
And we're always honored and delighted when he shows up.
So many good calls today.
We had great calls today. Next week, we should have Dave and Steve back. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Sound Bites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.